Welcome to the show, folks. Good to see you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So I'll come to you first, Professor Barnes. Now, as I mentioned, a bunch of changes on the horizon, especially over the past year and a half. But before the Trump administration made these recent changes, tell us how SNAP has been funded so far.
So historically, SNAP has been funded by the Farm Bill, and it's been considered an entitlement, meaning the federal government covers the cost of benefits. There has been historically a cost-sharing agreement between the federal government and states where the administrative budget is covered 50% by the federal government, 50% by states. And there has been work requirements in the past, but they were far less broad as they are now. Primarily targeting folks that don't have dependents, so able-bodied adults without dependents, through 59.
So the administrative costs bundled in there have traditionally been paid by the federal government, too, right? They would cover the full cost of SNAP benefits.
They'd cover the full cost of SNAP benefits and share half of the administrative budget with
50-50.
The states. 50-50.
50-50 with the states. Right. And Nolan, so we're clear, what exactly has changed since Trump signed that one big, beautiful bill last year?
So much has changed. I mean, as we all know, that bill contained historic, unprecedented, and cruel cuts to the social safety net. As Dr. Barnes has mentioned, we've already seen expanded work requirements and harsh immigrant eligibility restrictions kick off lawfully present humanitarian immigrants, kick off people who have never been subject to work requirements, thousands of people losing benefits in the state already. But now the change that's coming in the years ahead is this shift in costs from the federal government to the state. And to put those two buckets of costs into context, SNAP benefits bring $4 billion worth of money into the state. That's money that is important for our state economy. Those administrative costs, also significant, but there we're talking about tens of millions of dollars. So what the state has historically shouldered is much, much smaller. Now a portion of that $4 billion is being shifted onto states, which could create a future financial obligation that is up to $700 million.
Wow.
And if the state does not pay that, we lose the program entirely. So the stakes are incredibly high for Illinois and for states across the country.
So that 50-50 that we just talked about with Professor Barnes is now 25-75 being from the states, right? So I got to bring you in now, a representative, because you know what Nolan just brings up is pretty jarring, right? Because on top of these increased administrative costs, the federal government wants to shift what could be as much as $705 million to Illinois to sustain this SNAP program. What's your reaction?
That is correct. My reaction, I mean, this is one of the things that keeps me up at night and several of my colleagues at night, because we are looking at, ever since, I refuse to call it that bill, I just call it H.R. 1, because the truth is that it's doing so much damage to our communities, whether it is SNAP, whether it's Medicaid, you know, when it comes to eligibility, we are just seeing a lot of the burden shifted to states. And the truth is that while here in Illinois, we have been successful in just passing our eighth balanced budget, the truth is that the more pressure that we get from the feds, that gap is going to continue to increase and increase. And at the state level, we just won't have the, currently with the revenues that we have, we won't be able to fill that gap. So it definitely is a pressure point that we as legislators have continued to talk about. We don't go back into session until November, but that doesn't mean that the conversations have not been happening to figure out what do we do.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, on top of, you know, really emphasizing the pressure point that our state is under, we can't afford it.
That's right.
We can't afford this shift in cost burden.
Yeah, it's historical. It's historical. It's never done before. Since the beginning of the program, we haven't had to do this, and it's just irresponsible.
So, Professor, I mean, not all states, as I understand it, would have to take on more financial burden to fund SNAP. So why does Illinois need to pay up?
So all states are going to be subject to this new cost-sharing agreement around the administration of the program. So they're going to have to cover 75% instead of 50. But what the federal government has done through H.R. 1 is essentially make an entitlement program conditional on performance. And the performance metric they care about is this error rate. There are two performance metrics that matter for SNAP. It's accuracy and speed. Mm-hmm. But they care a lot about accuracy because there's this too much emphasis on fraud. So now...
And you're talking about like overpaying,
overpaying
or underpaying
people. Yes, yes. Overpaying or underpaying. So now states that have an error rate that's higher than 6% are going to be subject to covering portions of that SNAP benefit, which they didn't have to before. And Illinois' error rate exceeds 6%. Mm.
I think it's at about 13% or more than 13%.
More than 13%. So they're on the hook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nolan, what else can you say about error rates and how they're factoring in here?
Well, listen, there are a couple of things to note here. Payment errors are, you know, this is a metric that has existed in the program for a long time. To put it in the simplest terms, this is a measure of whether people on the program were paid the right amount of SNAP. Sometimes people receive a little bit over, sometimes people receive a little bit under. SNAP, like many income-based programs, there are many financial and non-financial factors that determine people's eligibility and benefit amount. Any small discrepancy with any number of those factors mm-hmm. could lead to what they call a payment error. These errors are overwhelmingly the result of innocent, unintentional mistakes. These could be mistakes by recipients themselves, by state workers, by the state's computer system. It is not fraud. We need to state that clearly. Fraud in the SNAP program is exceedingly low. We're talking about 0.1% of families who are investigated, not found guilty of, investigated for fraud. Fraud does not meaningfully exist in these programs, but nonetheless, this metric now is shifting hundreds of millions of dollars of future costs to state. And I mean, I should say, $700 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Right.
I really appreciate Representative Avalar talking about the state needing to prepare now for what we can do. It is a big number. But this is, the stakes are so high. You know, I think that what we really can't afford is to not pay this bill.
Yeah.
We know that at the federal level, we're going to do everything we can so that eventually all of the damage that's been done to HR1 is reversed in its entirety. That is our goal. That needs to be our focus. But until that goal is achieved, we cannot afford to lose this program at the state level. And mm-hmm. if there is a bill to be paid, as unjust as it is, we've got to pay it to keep people fed in this state.
Well, I want to stay right there because, you know, we are talking about essentially a lot of technical things, right? Error rates and operational costs and things like that. But I want to hear from each of you. What is fundamentally the most concerning piece of this to you? Rep?
I would say for me is we're going to have a chilling effect of people who qualify for SNAP not wanting to apply for SNAP. And we've seen that. We've seen that as being a tactic to cost cutting. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of the fact that we're going to have people who qualify for SNAP not apply.
Professor Barnes?
I echo that. So when you said that these cost-sharing agreements kept you up at night, I felt that. I've been saying that for the last year. I think this is all designed to discourage people from participating. And we know early evidence suggests that children are disproportionately affected. So I'm worried about hungry kids.
Mm. Nolan, is this just another way to gut the SNAP program?
Absolutely. All of HR1 is intended to degrade our social safety net. As we stated, these are historic cuts in terms of their scope and their depth. So all of this, however the rhetoric is tied up, we should not be fooled into thinking that this is anything other than just an attempt to degrade the social safety net mm-hmm. and to increase the suffering of people who are already struggling to get by in this
country.
Can this
be reversed?
It must be. It must be. I mean, our elected officials at the federal level need to keep their eyes on the prize here. This is something that has to be undone, and it needs to be undone as quickly as possible.
Representative Avalar, could we take this to the courts?
I hope so. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the work that we're doing at the state level, while we've been able to pass a lot of legislation to what I'd like to call Trump-proof the state of Illinois, this is something that I, you know, a special shout out to our attorney general and his team of staff, yes, who have been fighting the fight. We've been fighting the fight at the legislative level. There's also the fight that's happening right now, not just in the state of Illinois, but with all these other states who are currently being impacted.
Mm-hmm. On the surface, Professor Barnes, I mean, incentivizing states to make fewer mistakes administering SNAP benefits, that could sound like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not that simple?
Well, I would argue that it's an effort to gut programs under the guise of improving systems and efficiency and performance. Mm. But you don't divest in systems and people when you want to see improvement. You invest in people and systems. So to punish states who have already struggled to perform along these metrics for decades, it's not helping, it's harming. So in that sense, I view this as a hidden way of gutting the program, like Nolan said. Mm-hmm. Like, let's figure out ways to not make this a salient snap cut, but use these sort of administrative mechanisms to deter people from participating in the program altogether.
Sure, and the fact that we're already down, right? I want to give more context for folks who are listening. More than 37 million people across the country received SNAP benefits in March. This is according to preliminary Department of Ag figures. That's actually down nearly 5 million people, about 11% from the previous year. This is all reporting from the Chicago Tribune. So we're already down, and it looks like, in your words, an attempt to keep that going, right? Keep that decrease going. If you just tuned in, good morning, folks. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. And we are talking about the federal government continuing its efforts to put more of the burden of SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, on states and local governments. And we're talking about what that could mean for folks who live here and rely on the food assistance program. In studio, we've got Nolan Downey, who's Senior Director of Policy with the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Carolyn Barnes, who's an associate professor at UChicago, and Illinois State Rep Dagmara Avalar of the 85th District. So what are you and lawmakers talking about right now? Because you see the problem. What are you and your peers discussing? What can you do? What is in your power?
Yeah, I think that part of what we've been doing is looking at priorities. And when I say priorities is based on HR 1, there are certain populations that are going to get kicked out this year. So in response to that, and very proud of the work that we've been able to do in the General Assembly, we were able to put as part of the budget the FRESH program, which is a program where eligible people will be receiving a $400 monthly, one-time, actually, I should say, benefit to help cover food and basic needs. This is specifically for people who might get kicked out due to work requirements. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the FRESH program. I should clarify, that's the Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger.
That is correct.
Program. Mm-hmm. What isn't working right now with the system, Nolan? If you had to just dissect it, what is the biggest issue right now?
I mean, I think right now, I have a lot of sympathy for states that are trying to implement these incredibly complex changes, seismic changes to programs. They're trying to do it on a tight timeline. They've been trying to do it at one point in the midst of the longest federal government shutdown that we've ever had, where they received very little technical assistance or guidance from the federal government. And they're dealing with a federal government that is fundamentally hostile toward benefits recipients. And so states, I think, are really struggling to implement these changes with compassion. So states like Illinois, who want to have that approach, you know, we've done, I think, work that, to Representative Avalar's point, we should be incredibly proud of. But the federal government is not making it easy on states. And to Dr. Barnes' point, these are already systems that are strained. Human services sectors across the country are already historically disinvested in. And so this additional strain and pressure is bringing these systems to the brink.
What are you thinking, Professor Barnes? I see you nodding. I'm also wondering your thoughts on the timing of this. Why is this happening now?
That's a good question. I think that there's always been pressure to make the safety net smaller. I think we've come off of an historical period of safety net expansion under the Biden administration, and we've seen the pendulum swing in the opposite direction. I think this is a partisan ideological fight, honestly. And I view this as sort of a political tool, these changes as a political tool to reduce the size of the safety net, to reduce people's demands on the state. Like, if I receive a program from the federal government, I'm invested in who's my elected official that's going to be representing my interest to protect that program.
Right.
So if I reduce these programs, I'm essentially shaping constituencies moving forward. I think we're at a turning point. This could go one way where people are mobilized and they say, I want to protect my Medicaid and I want to protect my SNAP. Or it could go another way where people are demobilized and assume that the state doesn't care about them. and they become, you know, apathetic about participating.
Representative, I got to get your response to that, because, I mean, this is such a contentious political issue right now. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's this notion of, you know, there's somebit gains when you pit communities against each other, right? And, you know, as we were talking, I just kept thinking about one of the things that grind my gears. With H.R. 1, H.R. 1 gave significant tax credits to corporations. And when we look at SNAP, a lot of SNAP recipients are people who are actively working, but yet their jobs do not offer benefits,
right,
or they don't even make enough to be able to afford health insurance. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, when we think about this, it's just, I'm speechless just about the amount of hate that is coming for the working poor.
Mm. And I'm still thinking about what Professor Brown said earlier about the impact on children. So many children are impacted when you make changes and make cuts and gut SNAP. So my final question to all of you, I mean, what are you looking out for next? Nolan?
You know, I would just say children are impacted, the working poor are impacted, but truly when these programs, SNAP, Medicaid, programs that are load-bearing pillars of society are weakened to this extent, we are all impacted. So the stakes are incredibly high, not just for folks that depend on these programs to go to the doctor to get food, but losing the revenue from SNAP, again, if we face the loss of this program in its entirety.
Yeah.
That's $4 billion out of the state economy. That's jobs lost. That's retailers closing. That's communities that no longer have access to food. That impacts all of us. So I think everyone needs to be invested in reversing these changes. And to Representative Avalar's point, changes that were done, and we should never forget, were done to make the wealthier in this country just even more wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
We should condemn that as forcefully as we can.
Professor Barnes?
I think I'm looking forward to seeing how people speak up and speak out about these programs. I've been really impressed with the level of advocacy in Illinois, both with organizations like the Chicago Food Depository, but also ordinary people that are ready to fight to protect these programs. So that's inspiring.
Yeah. And Representative?
You know, I am very much looking forward to continuing to do the work that we've been doing in the Illinois General Assembly, in collaboration, I would also say, with our congresspeople. Many of our congresspeople, you know, I thank them for their service, especially in such tremendous, horrible times that we're living in. But as a state, I think that we continue and will continue to fight for making sure that Illinois families are treated with dignity and respect.
We'll leave it there for now. That's Illinois State Rep. Dagmara D. Avalar of the 85th District. We've also been talking with Carolyn Barnes, who's an associate professor at the Crown Family School at UChicago, and Nolan Downey, who's a senior director of policy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.